Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 10, side 1. Luke ignited his lightsaber again and quickly cut them a hole large enough to get through. Carda went first, followed by Luke, with Mara bringing up the rear. "The hangar bay computer link is over there," Mara said, pointing to a freestanding console to their right as they crouched beside a battered-looking light freighter. "As soon as the lift passes, I'll see if I can get us into it." "All right, but don't take too long at it," Carda warned. "A faked transfer order won't gain us enough surprise to be worth any further delay." The top of a ship was becoming visible now as it was lifted from the hangar bays below. A ship that seemed remarkably familiar. Luke felt his mouth drop open in surprise. "That's... no. No, it can't be." "It is," Mara said. "I'd forgotten. The Grand Admiral mentioned they were taking it aboard when I talked to him at Endor." Luke stared, a cold lump forming in his throat as the Millennium Falcon rose steadily up through the opening. Leia and Chewbacca had been aboard that ship. "Did he say anything about prisoners?" "Not to me," Mara said. "I got the impression he'd found the ship deserted." Which meant that wherever Leia and Chewbacca had gone, they were now stranded there. But there was no time to worry about that now. "We're taking it back," he told the others, stuffing his lightsaber into his flight suit tunic. "Cover me."
"Skywalker,"
Mara hissed. But Luke was already jogging toward the shaft. The lift plate itself came into view, revealing two men riding alongside the Falcon. A naval trooper and a tech with what looked like a combined datapad control unit. They caught sight of Luke. "Hey," Luke called, waving as he hurried toward them. "Hold on." The tech did something with his datapad and the lift stopped, and Luke could sense the sudden suspicion in the trooper's mind. "Got new orders on that one," he said as he trotted up to them. "The Grand Admiral wants it moved back down. Something about using it as bait." The tech frowned down at his datapad. He was young, Luke saw, probably not out of his teens. "There's nothing about new orders here," he objected. "I haven't heard anything about it either," the trooper growled, drawing his blaster and pointing it vaguely in Luke's direction as he threw a quick look around the storage room. "It just came through a minute ago," Luke said, nodding back toward the computer console. "Stuff's not transferring very fast today, for some reason." "Makes a good story, anyway," the trooper retorted. His blaster was now very definitely pointed at Luke. "Let's see some ID, huh?" Luke shrugged, and reaching out through the force, he yanked the blaster out of the trooper's hand. The man didn't even pause to gape at the unexpected loss of his weapon. He threw himself forward, hand stretching toward Luke's neck. The blaster, heading straight toward Luke, suddenly reversed direction. The trooper caught the butt end full in the stomach, coughed once in strangled agony, and fell unmoving to the deck. "I'll take that," Luke told the tech, waving Carda and Mara to join him. The tech, his face a rather motley gray, handed the datapad to him without a word. "Good job," Carda said as he came up beside Luke. "Relax, we're not going to hurt you," he added to the tech, squatting down and relieving the gasping trooper of his comlink. "Not if you behave, anyway. Take your friend to that electrical closet over there and lock yourselves in." The tech glanced at him, looked again at Luke, and gave a quick nod. Hoisting the trooper under the armpits, he dragged him off. "Make sure they get settled all right, and then join me in the ship," Carda told Luke. "I'm going to get the pre-flight started. Are there any security codes I need to know about?" "I don't think so." Luke glanced around the room, spotted Mara, already busy with the computer console. The Falcon's hard enough to keep functional as it is. All right. Remind Mara not to waste too much time fiddling with that computer. He ducked under the ship and disappeared up the ramp. Luke waited until the tech had locked himself and the trooper into the electrical closet as ordered, and then followed. It has a remarkably fast startup sequence, Carter remarked, as Luke joined him in the cockpit. 2 minutes, maybe three, and we'll be ready to fly. You still have that controller? Right here, Luke said, handing it to him. I'll go get Mara. He glanced out the cockpit window. Just as a wide door across the room slid open to reveal a full squad of stormtroopers. Uh-oh, Carda murmured, as the 8 white-armored Imperials marched purposefully toward the Falcon. Do they know we're here? Luke stretched out his senses, trying to gauge the stormtrooper's mental state. I don't think so, he murmured back. They seem to be thinking more like guards than soldiers. Probably too noisy in here for them to hear the engines in startup mode, Carda said, ducking down in his seat out of their direct view. Mara was right about the Grand Admiral, but we seem to be a step ahead of him. A sudden thought struck Luke, and he threw a look through the side of the canopy. Mara was crouching beside the computer console, temporarily hidden from the stormtrooper's view. But she wouldn't remain concealed for long, and knowing Mara, she wouldn't just sit and wait for the Imperials to notice her. If there were only some way he could warn her not to fire on them yet. Perhaps there was. Mara, he sensed silently, trying to picture her in his mind. Wait until I give the word before you attack. There was no reply, but he saw her throw a quick look at the Falcon in response and ease farther back into her limited cover. I'm going back to the hatchway, he told Carda. I'll try to catch them in a crossfire with Mara. Stay out of sight up here. Right. Keeping down, Luke hurried back down the short cockpit corridor. Barely in time, even as he came to the hatchway, he could feel the vibration of battle-armored boots on the entry ramp. 4 of them were coming in, he could sense, with the other 4 fanning out beneath the ship to watch the approaches. Another second and they would see him. A second after that and someone would notice Mara. Mara, now. There was a flash of blaster fire from Mara's position, coming quickly enough on the tail of his command that Luke got the distinct impression Mara had planned to attack at that time, whether she'd had his permission or not. Igniting his lightsaber, Luke leaped around the corner onto the ramp, catching the stormtroopers just as they were starting to turn toward the threat behind them. His first sweep took off the barrel of the lead stormtrooper's blaster rifle. Reaching out with the force, he gave the man a hard shove, pushing him into his companions and sending the whole bunch of them tumbling helplessly down to the lift plate. Jumping off the ramp to the side, he deflected a shot from another stormtrooper and sliced the lightsaber blade across him. Caught a half dozen more shots before Mara's blaster fire took the next one out. A quick look showed that she'd already dealt with the other 2. A surge in the force spun him around to find that the group he'd sent rolling to the bottom of the ramp had untangled themselves. With a shout, he charged them, lightsaber swinging in large circles as he waited for Mara to take advantage of his distraction to fire on them. But she didn't. And with the blaster bolts beginning to flash in at him, there weren't many alternatives left. The lightsaber slashed 4 times, and it was over. Breathing hard, he closed down the lightsaber, and with a shock, discovered why Mara hadn't been firing there at the end. The lift carrying the Falcon was dropping steadily down toward the deck below, well past the point where the stormtroopers would be out of Mara's line of fire. Mara, he called, looking up. Yeah, what? She shouted back, coming into view at the rim of the lift, already 5 meters above him. What's Carda doing? I guess we're leaving, Luke said. Jump, I'll catch you. An expression of annoyance flickered across Mara's face. But the Falcon was receding fast, and she obeyed without hesitation. Reaching out with the Force, Luke caught her in an invisible grip, slowing her descent and landing her on the Falcon's ramp. She hit the ramp running and was inside in 3 steps. She was seated beside Carda in the cockpit by the time Luke got the hatchway sealed and made it up there himself. "Better strap in," she called over her shoulder. Luke sat down behind her, suppressing the urge to order her out of the co-pilot seat. He knew the Falcon far better than either she or Carda did, but both of them probably had had more experience flying this general class of ship. And from the looks of things, there was some tricky flying coming up. Through the cockpit canopy, Luke could see that they were coming down, not into a hangar bay as he'd hoped, but into a wide vehicle corridor equipped with what looked like some kind of repulsor lift pad set across the deck. "What happened with the computer?" he asked Mara.
"I couldn't get in," Mara said. "Though it wouldn't have mattered if I had. That stormtrooper squad had plenty of time to call for help. Unless you thought to jam their comlinks," she added, looking at Carda.
"Come now, Mara," Carda chided. "Of course I jammed their comlinks. Unfortunately, since they probably had orders to report once they were in position, we still won't have more than a few minutes, if that much." "Is that our way out?" Luke frowned, looking along the corridor. "I thought we'd be taking the lift straight down to the hangar bays." "This lift doesn't seem to go all the way down," Carda said. "Offset from the hangar bay shaft, apparently. That lighted hole in the corridor deck ahead is probably it."
"What then?" Luke asked.
"We'll see if this control can operate that lift," Carda said, holding up the data pad he'd taken from the tech. "I doubt it, though. If only for security, they'll probably have..."
"Look,"
Mara snapped, pointing down the corridor. Far ahead down the corridor was another lift plate, moving down toward the lighted opening Carda had pointed out a moment earlier. If that was indeed the exit to the hangar bays, and if the lift plate stopped there, blocking their way... Carda had apparently had the same thought. Abruptly, Luke was slammed hard into his seat as the Falcon leaped forward, clearing the edge of their lift plate and shooting down the corridor like a scalded tauntaun. For a moment, it yawed wildly back and forth, swinging perilously near the corridor walls as the ship's repulsor lifts strobed with those built into the deck. Clenching his teeth, Luke watched as the lift plate ahead steadily closed the gap, the same bitter taste of near helplessness in his mouth that he remembered from the Rancor pit beneath Jabba the Hutt's throne room. The Force was with him here, as it had been there, but at the moment he couldn't think of a way to harness that power. The Falcon shot toward the descending plate. He braced himself for the seemingly inevitable collision. And abruptly, with a short screech of metal against metal, they were through the gap. The Falcon rolled over once as it dropped through to the huge room below, cleared the vertical lift plate guides. And there, straight ahead as Carda righted them again, was the wide hangar entry port, and beyond it, the black of deep space. A half dozen blaster bolts sizzled at them as they shot across the hangar bay above the various ships parked there. But the shooting was reflexive, without any proper setup or aiming, and, for the most part, the shots went wild. A near miss flashed past the cockpit canopy, and then they were out, jolting through the atmosphere barrier and diving down out of the entry port toward the planet below. And as they did so, Luke caught a glimpse across the entry port of TIE fighters from the forward hangar bays scrambling to intercept. "Come on, Mara," he said, slipping off his restraints. "You know how to handle a quad laser battery?"
"No, I need her here," Carda said.
He had the Falcon skimming the underside of the Star Destroyer now, heading for the ship's portside edge.
You go ahead and take the dorsal gun bay. I think I can arrange for them to concentrate their attack from that direction.
Luke had no idea how he was going to accomplish that, but there was no time to discuss it. Already, the Falcon was starting to jolt with laser hits, and from experience, he knew there was only so much the ship's deflector shields could handle. Leaving the cockpit, he hurried to the gunwale ladder, leaping halfway up, then climbing the rest of the way. He strapped in, fired up the quads, and as he looked around, he discovered what Carda had had in mind. The Falcon had curved up past the portside edge of the Chimera, swung aft along the upper surface, and was now driving hard for deep space on a vector directly above the exhaust from the Star Destroyer's massive sublight drive nozzles. Skimming rather too close to it, in Luke's opinion, but it was for sure that no TIE fighters would be coming at them from underneath for a while. The intercom pinged in his ear.
Skywalker, Carda's voice came. They're almost here. You ready?
I'm ready, Luke assured him. Fingers resting lightly on the firing controls, he focused his mind and let the force flow into him. The battle was furious, but short, in some ways reminding Luke of the Falcon's escape from the Death Star so long ago. Back then, Leia had recognized that they'd gotten away too easily, and as the TIE fighters swarmed and fired and exploded around him, Luke wondered uneasily whether or not the Imperials might have something equally devious in mind this time, too. And then the sky flared with star lines and went mottled, and they were free. Luke took a deep breath as he cut power to the quads.
Good flying, he said into the intercom. Thank you, Carda's dry voice came back. We seem to be more or less clear, though we took some damage around the starboard power converter pack. Mara's gone to check it out.
We can manage without it, Luke said. Han's got the whole ship so cross-wired that it'll fly with half the systems out. Where are we headed?
Coruscant, Carda said. To drop you off, and also to follow through on the promise I made to you earlier.
Luke had to search his memory. You mean that bit about the New Republic standing to gain from your rescue?
That's the one, Carda assured him.
As I recall Solo's sales pitch to me back on Mirker, your people are in need of transport ships, correct?
Badly in need of them, Luke agreed. You have some stashed away?
Not exactly stashed away, but it won't be too hard to put my hands on them. What do you think the New Republic would say to approximately 200 pre-Clone Wars vintage Dreadnought-class heavy cruisers?
Luke felt his mouth fall open.
Growing up on Tatooine had been a sheltered experience, but it hadn't been that sheltered.
You don't mean the Dark Force?
Come on down and we'll discuss it, Carda said. Oh, and I wouldn't mention it to Mara just yet.
I'll be right there.
Turning off the intercom, Luke hung the headset back on its hook and climbed onto the ladder. And for once, he didn't even notice the discontinuity as the gravity field changed direction partway down the ladder. The Millennium Falcon shot away from the Chimera, outmaneuvering and outgunning its pursuing TIE fighters, and driving hard for deep space. Pelion sat at his station, hands curled into fists, watching the drama in helpless silence. Helpless, because with the main computer still only partially operational, the Chimera's sophisticated weapons and tractor beam systems were useless against a ship that small, that fast, and that distant. Silent, because the disaster was far beyond the scope of any of his repertoire of curses. The ship flickered and was gone, and Pelion prepared himself for the worst. The worst didn't come.
Recall the TIE fighters to their stations, Captain, Thrawn said, his voice showing no sign of strain or anger. Secure from intruder alert, and have systems control continue bringing the main computer back online. Oh, and the supply unloading can be resumed.
Yes, sir, Pelion said, throwing a surreptitious frown at his superior. Had Thrawn somehow missed the significance of what had just happened out there? The glowing red eyes glinted as Thrawn looked at him.
We've lost a round, Captain, he said. No more.
It seems to me, Admiral, that we've lost far more than that, Pelion growled. There's no chance that Carda won't give the Katana fleet to the Rebellion now.
Ah, but he won't simply give it to them, Thrawn corrected, almost lazily. Carda's pattern has never been to give anything away for free. He'll attempt to bargain, or else will set conditions the Rebellion will find unsatisfactory. The negotiations will take time, particularly given the suspicious political atmosphere we've taken such pains to create on Coruscant. And a little time is all we need.
Pelion shook his head. You're assuming that ship thief Farrier will be able to find the Corellian Group ship supplier before Carda and the Rebellion work out their differences.
There's no assumption involved, Thrawn said softly. Farrier is even now on Solo's trail and has extrapolated his destination for us. And thanks to Intelligence's excellent work on Carda's background, I know exactly who the man is we'll be meeting at the end of that trail.
He gazed out the viewport at the returning TIE fighters.
Instruct navigation to prepare a course for the Pantalomin system, Captain, he said, his voice thoughtful. Departure to be as soon as the supply shuttles have been unloaded.
Yes, sir, Pelion said, nodding the order on to the navigator and doing a quick calculation in his head.
Time for the Millennium Falcon to reach Coruscant. Time for the Chimera to reach Pantalomin.
Yes, Thrawn said into his thoughts. Now it's a race.
Chapter 24 The sun had set over the brown hills of Honor, leaving a lingering hint of red and violet in the clouds above the horizon. Leia watched the fading color from just inside the Dooka door, feeling the all-too-familiar sense of nervous dread that always came when she was about to go into danger and battle. A few more minutes, and she, Chewbacca, and 3PO would be setting out from Stow to free Kabarak and escape, or to die trying. She sighed and walked back into the Dooka, wondering dimly where she'd gone wrong on this whole thing. It had seemed so reasonable to come to Honor, so right somehow, to make such a bold gesture of good faith to the Nogri. Even before leaving Kashyyyk, she'd been convinced that the offer hadn't been entirely her own idea, but instead the subtle guidance of the Force. And perhaps it had been, but not necessarily from the side of the Force she'd assumed. A cool breeze whispered in through the doorway, and Leia shivered. The Force is strong in my family. Luke had said those words to her on the eve of the Battle of Endor. She hadn't believed it at first, not until long afterward when his patient training had begun to bring out a hint of those abilities in her. But her father had had that same training and those same abilities, and yet had ultimately fallen to the dark side. One of the twins kicked. She paused, reaching out to gently touch the two tiny beings within her. And as she did so, fragments of memory flooded in on her. Her mother's face, taut and sad, lifting her from the darkness of the trunk where she'd lain hidden from prying eyes.
unfamiliar faces leaning over her, while her mother spoke to them in a tone that had frightened her and set her crying. Crying again when her mother died, holding tightly to the man she'd learned to call father. Pain and misery and fear, and all of it because of her true father, the man who had renounced the name Anakin Skywalker to call himself Darth Vader. There was a faint shuffling sound from the doorway.
"What is it, 3PO?"
Leia asked, turning to face the droid.
"Your Highness, Chewbacca has informed me that you will be leaving here soon,"
3PO said, his prim voice a little anxious.
"May I assume that I will be accompanying you?"
"Yes, of course," Leia told him.
"Whatever happens in Unstyle, I don't think you'll want to be here for the aftermath."
"I quite agree." The droid hesitated, and Leia could see in his stance that his anxiety hadn't been totally relieved.
"There is, however, something that I really think you should know," he continued.
"One of the decon droids has been acting very strangely."
"Really?"
Leia said.
"What exactly does this strangeness consist of?"
"He seems far too interested in everything,"
3PO said.
"He has asked a great number of questions, not only about you and Chewbacca, but also about me. I've also seen him moving about the village after he was supposed to be shut down for the night."
"Probably just an improper memory wipe the last time around," Leia said, not really in the mood for a full-blown discussion of droid personality quirks. "I could name one or two other droids who have more curiosity than their original programming intended."
"Your Highness," 3PO protested, sounding wounded. "R2 is a different case altogether."
"I wasn't referring only to R2. Leia held up a hand to forestall further discussion.
"But I understand your concerns. I tell you what, you keep an eye on this droid for me, all right?"
"Of course, Your Highness," 3PO said.
He gave a little bow and shuffled his way back out into the gathering dusk. Leia sighed and looked around her. Her restless wandering around the Dooka had brought her to the genealogy wall chart, and for a long minute she gazed at it. There was a deep sense of history present in the carved wood, a sense of history and a quiet but deep family pride. She let her eyes trace the connections between the names, wondering what the Nogri themselves thought and felt as they studied it. Did they see their triumphs and failures both, or merely their triumphs? Both, she decided. The Nogri struck her as a people who didn't deliberately blind themselves to reality.
"Do you see in the wood the end of our family, Lady Vader?"
Leia jumped.
"I sometimes wish you people weren't so good at that," she growled as she regained her balance.
"Forgive me," the Matrox said, perhaps a bit dryly. "I did not mean to startle you."
She gestured at the chart.
"Do you see our end there, Lady Vader?"
Leia shook her head.
"I have no vision of any future, Matrox. Not yours, not even mine. I was just thinking about children, trying to imagine what it's like to try to raise them, wondering how much of their character a family can mold and how much is innate in the children themselves."
She hesitated.
"Wondering if the evil in a family's history can be erased or whether it always passes itself on to each new generation."
The Matrox tilted her head slightly, the huge eyes studying Leia's face.
"You speak as one newly facing the challenge of child service."
"Yes," Leia admitted, her hand caressing her belly. "I don't know if Kabarak told you, but I'm carrying my first two children."
and you fear for them.
Leia felt a muscle in her cheek twitch. With good reason. The Empire wants to take them from me. The Matrox hissed softly.
Why?
I'm not sure, but the purpose can only be an evil one. The Matrox dropped her gaze.
I'm sorry, Lady Vader. I would help you if I could.
Leia reached over to touch the Nogri's shoulder.
I know.
The Matrox looked up at the genealogy chart.
I sent all four of my sons into danger, Lady Vader, to the Emperor's battles. It never becomes easier to watch them go forth to war and death.
Leia thought of all her allies and companions who had died in the Long War.
I've sent friends to their deaths, she said quietly. That was hard enough. I can't imagine sending my children.
Three of them died, the Matrox continued, almost as if talking to herself.
Far from home, with none but their companions to mourn them. The fourth became a cripple and returned home to live his shortened life in the silent despair of dishonor before death released him.
Leia grimaced. And now, as the cost for helping her, Kabarak was facing both dishonor and death. The line of thought paused.
Wait a minute. You said all four of your sons went to war, and that all four have since died?
The Matrox nodded.
That is correct.
But then, what about Kabarak? Isn't he also your son?
He is my third son, the Matrox said,
a strange expression on her face.
A son of the son of my first son.
Leia looked at her, a sudden horrible realization flashing through her. If Kabarak was not her son, but instead her great-grandson, and if the Matrox had personally witnessed the space battle that had brought destruction on honor...
Matrox, how long has your world been like this? She breathed. How many years?
The Nogri stared at her, clearly sensing the sudden change in mood.
Lady Vader, what have I said? How many years?
The Matrox twitched away from her.
48 Nogri years, she said. In years of the Emperor, 44.
Leia put her hand against the smooth wood of the genealogy chart, her knees suddenly feeling weak with shock.
44 years.
Not the 5 or 8 or even 10 that she'd assumed.
44. It didn't happen during the rebellion, she heard herself say. It happened during the Clone Wars.
And suddenly, the shock gave way to a wall of blazing white anger.
44 years, she snarled. They've held you like this for 44 years?
She spun to face the door. Chewie, she called, for the moment not caring who might hear her.
Chewie, get in here.
A hand gripped her shoulder, and she turned back around to find the Matrox gazing at her, an unreadable expression on her alien face.
Lady Vader, you will tell me what is the matter.
44 years, Matrox, is what's the matter, Leia told her. The fiery heat of her anger was fading, leaving behind an icy resolve.
They've held you in slavery for almost half a century, lying through their teeth to you, cheating you, murdering your sons.
She jabbed a finger down toward the ground beneath their feet.
That is not 44 years worth of decontamination work. And if they aren't just cleaning the dirt...
There was a heavy footstep at the door, and Chewbacca charged in, bowcaster at the ready. He saw Leia, roared a question as his weapon swung to cover the Matrox.
"I'm not in danger, Chewie," Leia told him. "Just very angry. I need you to get me some more samples from the contaminated area. Not soil this time, some of the comb grass."
She could see the surprise in the Wookiee's face, but he merely growled an acknowledgement and left.
"Why do you wish to examine the comb grass?" the Matrox asked.
"You said yourself it smelled different than before the rains came," Leia reminded her. "I think there may be a connection here we've missed."
"What connection could there be?"
Leia shook her head.
"I don't want to say anything more right now, Matrox. Not until I'm sure."
"Do you still wish to go to N'Stau?"
"More than ever," Leia said grimly. "But not to hit and run. If Chewie's samples show what I think they will, I'm going to go straight to the dynasts."
"What if they refuse to listen?"
Leia took a deep breath.
"They can't refuse," she said. "You've already lost 3 generations of your sons. You can't afford to lose any more."
For a minute, the Nogri gazed at her in silence.
"You speak truth," she said.
She hissed softly between her needle teeth, and with her usual fluid grace moved toward the door.
"I will return within the hour," she said over her shoulder. "Will you be ready to leave then?"
"Yes," Leia nodded. "Where are you going?"
The Matrox paused at the door, her dark eyes locking onto Leia's.
"You speak truth, Lady Vader. They must listen. I will be back."
The Matrox returned 20 minutes later, 5 minutes ahead of Chewbacca. The Wookiee had collected a double handful of the comb grass from widely scattered sites and retrieved the analysis unit from its hiding place in the decon droid shed. Leia got the unit started on a pair of the ugly brown plants, and they set off for N'Stau. But not alone. To Leia's surprise, a young Nogri female was already seated at the driver's seat of the open-topped land speeder the Matrox had obtained for them. And as they drove through the village at a brisk walking pace, a dozen more Nogri joined them, striding along on both sides of the land speeder like an honor guard. The Matrox herself walked next to the vehicle, her face unreadable in the dim reflected light from the instrument panel. Sitting in the back seat next to the analysis unit, Chewbacca fingered his bowcaster and rumbled distrustingly deep in his throat. Behind him, wedged into the luggage compartment at the rear of the vehicle, 3PO was uncharacteristically quiet. They passed through the village into the surrounding cropland, running without lights, the small group of Nogri around them virtually invisible in the cloud-shrouded starlight. The party reached another village, barely distinguishable from the cropland now that its own lights were darkened for the night, and passed through without incident. More cropland. Another village. More cropland. Occasionally, Leia caught glimpses of the lights of N'Stau far ahead, and she wondered uneasily whether confronting the dynast directly was really the wisest course of action at this point. They ruled with the assistance, or at least the tacit consent, of the Empire, and to accuse them of collaboration with a lie would not sit well with such a proud and honor-driven people. And then, in the northeast sky, the larger of Honor's 3 moons broke through a thick cloud bank. And with a shock, Leia saw that she and her original escort were no longer alone. All around them was an immense sea of shadowy figures, flowing like a silent tide along the landspeeder's path. Behind her, Chewbacca growled surprise of his own. With his hunter's senses, he had already been aware that the size of their party was increasing with each village they passed through. But even he hadn't grasped the full extent of the recruitment, and wasn't at all certain he liked it. But Leia found some of the tightness in her chest easing as she settled back against the landspeeder's cushions. Whatever happened in Enstau now, the sheer size of the assemblage would make it impossible for the Dynast to simply arrest her and cover up the fact that she'd ever been there. The Matroch had guaranteed her a chance to speak. The rest would be up to her. They reached the edge of Enstau just before sunrise to find another crowd of Nogri waiting for them. "Word has arrived ahead of us," the Matroch told Leia as the landspeeder and its escort moved toward them. "They have come to see the daughter of the Lord Vader and to hear her message." Leia looked at the crowd. "And what is the message you've told them to expect?" "That the debt of honor to the Empire has been paid in full," the Matroch said. "That you have come to offer a new life for the Nogri people." Her dark eyes bored into Leia's face in unspoken question. Leia looked in turn over her shoulder at Chewbacca and raised her eyebrows. The Wookiee rumbled an affirmative and tilted the analysis unit up to show her the display. Sometime during their midnight journey, the unit had finally finished its work. And as she read the analysis, Leia felt a fresh stirring of her earlier anger toward the Empire at what they'd done to these people. "Yes," she told the Matroch, "I can indeed prove that the debt has been paid." Nearer now to the waiting crowd, she could see in the dusky light that most of the Nogri were females. The relative handful of males she could spot were either the very light gray skin tone of children and young adolescents, or the much darker gray of the elderly. But directly in line with the landspeeder's path were a group of about 10 males with the steely gray color of young adults. "I see the Dynasts have heard the word, too," she said. "That is our official escort," the Matroch said. "They will accompany us to the Grand Duca, where the Dynasts await you." The official escort, or guards, or soldiers, Leia wasn't quite sure how to think of them, remained silent as they walked in arrowhead formation in front of the landspeeder. The rest of the crowd was alive with whispered conversation, most of it between the city dwellers and the villagers. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.